Chuck Norris broke into movies in a fight to the death against Kung Fu master Bruce Lee in Return of the Dragon. Norris had learned karate in Korea while in the Air Force. Back in California, he became the world middleweight karate champion, a title he held for 6 years. He also set up karate academies where he taught several Hollywood celebrities. One of his pupils, Steve McQueen, encouraged him to pursue a career in acting. He went on to make 12 kung fu films and became a martial arts cult hero. Then he diversified to become an all-around tough guy action hero. In the last 3 years, he has appeared in Code of Silence, Invasion USA, Delta Force, and Missing in Action Parts 1, 2, and now Braddock Missing in Action Part 3, which opened last week. Chuck Norris has also written an autobiography. It's titled The Secret of Inner Strength. I spoke with him from the NPR studio in New York. I asked him to describe the kind of karate he learned while stationed in Korea.
Well, it's at that time it was called Tang Soo Do. Today it's more prominently known as Taekwondo, which is an emphasis on kicking.
Okay. Now, you taught karate in America, won many karate championships. Bruce Lee got you your first film roles. Did you already want to break into acting when you met Bruce Lee?
No, not at all. When I did the film with Bruce, I had no desire to be an actor. I was still in the karate business and still competing, and I did Return of the Dragon strictly as a kick.
No pun intended.
No pun intended, right.
Okay. Right. Well, that was in 1972. Would you describe the fight scene that you were in Return of the Dragon?
Well, when, of course, the fight scene is to the death in the Colosseum in Rome, about basically like two gladiators pitting their skills against each other. And it was very exciting, you know, to be in the Colosseum in Rome and just look out into the arena there and think that a few hundred years ago, they were doing it for real. So it was quite exciting, actually.
Now, you both choreographed the scene together, right? Yourself and Bruce Lee?
Yeah, we'd worked out together for about 3 years prior to this. And so when we decided to do the film, the fight itself, he said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I'll do this, this, and this. So we just kind of choreographed it right there on the set.
Now, you did Korean karate, taekwondo, and he was a Chinese form of karate,
right.
Kung fu. Were there any differences in style that you had to reconcile before getting the choreography together?
No, not at all, because we'd both studied many other styles as well. And I'd studied the Chinese and, you know, with Bruce and the Japanese style. So I was really a conglomeration of several styles, and so was Bruce Lee. Bruce didn't stick strictly to the Chinese styles. He'd studied many different styles. So there was real good chance, you know, ability of us working together.
Now, in the scene, I imagine that you didn't really hit each other hard. I mean, what are the rules there when you're choreographing a fight scene for the movie? How did you do it in 1972?
Well, of course, we didn't go to hurt each other. There's light contact, but just as we would make contact, we would pull the blow right at the point of contact rather than following through with it, you know, so we could finish the fight.
Is that something you're used to from sparring?
Yeah, you learn to control your kicks, and especially from my movies, you know, I have to learn to do that in my films to keep them hurting the stuntmen.
Did you enjoy kung fu movies at the time? Did you see a lot of them?
In the beginning I did, but they became redundant. They were all the same. You know, when you have a movie that just has fight from beginning to end, and there's no story or no emotion involved, it becomes redundant and it gets boring after a few minutes of watching kick, 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 punch, punch. And so it's important, I think, that's why they died out. That's why there's no longer those kind of films in the American market, is the fact that after a while you get bored of them. That's why I didn't want to do those kind of films.
But early on, didn't you want to convince Hollywood that you would be a good star for kung fu type American vehicles?
In the beginning, of course, when I was trying to break through into the film business, when Bruce Lee died, the karate market or the kung fu market in movies died with him. All producers thought, well, since Bruce died, there was no one else that could fulfill that bill. And so when I finally broke in 77, I was known as the kung fu star, you know, in Hollywood or in the media. But I knew that if I was stuck strictly as a kung fu star, that my career would be very limited and I'd never, you know, wouldn't be able to grow. So I started working more into the action orientation of my films with, you know, martial arts or karate integrated into the action. And that way I wouldn't be limited to being strictly a kung fu star, and that's what's worked for me.
What were some of the things that you had to learn in order to broaden into more general action films?
Learning how to act was the main thing. Remember, I jumped into the films with absolutely no experience as an actor, had very little acting classes and so forth, so I had to kind of learn on the job, and it wasn't easy to do that.
Wasn't there a certain amount of acting you have to do to be successful in karate?
No, not acting like you do on the screen, because it's a total different thing. You have to have that drive and determination like an actor does, and you have to, you're performing, but it's on a physical level. but in films, when you're doing scenes over and over again, see, remember when you're fighting, it's spontaneous. But when you do a film, everything is prearranged. You have marks you have to hit. You have to, have to do the scenes over and over again, and so it's much more difficult that way.
Well, Steve McQueen, who was a friend of yours and whose son studied at your karate school, gave you some advice on acting. He told you not to verbalize what's already on the screen. Mm-hmm. It almost seems like that became a code for you. I mean, you're really known in your movies as not saying a lot.
Most of your action actors, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, I think all of us kind of stick to that mode. Is that when there's something to say, say it. If it isn't important, then keep your mouth shut, you know. And whether that's right or wrong is up to debate. But, you know, the thing is that we're not Dustin Hoffman, who's got that ability to express in words. And because he can express in words and you can visualize them. But not many actors have that ability to verbally express himself and you can, in your mind, see what he's saying. So the thing is, if you can show it on the screen visually rather than verbally, it's much better.
Chuck Norris is my guest, and in addition to starring in the new film Missing in Action, he's written an autobiography which is titled The Secret of Inner Strength. Let's talk about stunts some more. Now, do you always do your own stunts?
Not all of them. Some I don't do. If it's way out of my range of ability, then, of course, I won't do it. I don't do fire burns, which is really extremely dangerous.
That's what, like you're walking through an exploded bomb or something,
right,
like that?
Right, or catching on fire.
Uh-huh.
And things like that I wouldn't want to do. There's just certain things, or high dives. And I'm not a high diver, so I have to have a stunt double do that. But anything that requires balance or coordination or a certain amount of strength, then I can do that.
Well, I remember in Code of Silence, there's a great scene in which you're fighting with someone on top of a New York City train.
Right. Yeah, I did that.
And the train is moving. That's you. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a stuntman.
No, I did that.
Now, the train was actually moving while you were doing that, wasn't it?
It was doing about 35 miles an hour. In fact, you know, the thing is, the stuntman that I was fighting with was a little bit apprehensive about me doing that because we were relying on each other to keep our balance on that train because we're 50 feet in the air. That's an L train. We're 50 feet in the air. And he said, I don't know if you should do this or not. I said, well, look, let's do it with the train stopped. If you feel I'm not capable of doing it, then we'll bring in a stunt double. So we did it with the train stopped. And he said, no. He says, you'll do okay. So I did the fight with him.
Do you carry any kind of insurance?
Well, of course, the studio gets very upset when I do that because if I do get hurt, then production stops and it costs a lot of money. But this, the audience today, it's very sophisticated. They look to see if it's a stunt double or if it's the stunt man or it's the actor doing it. And so if it's something that I can do, then I like to do it. Especially when you do an acting scene, you really don't know if it's good or bad until it gets on the screen. But when you do a stunt, you know immediately whether it's good or bad. And there's an immediate exhilaration when you do a stunt that you don't get as in an acting scene.
Do you like the camera to go in for more close-ups than they usually would in an action scene to show that you really are doing the stunt?
Well, I like the camera to come close anyway because the thing is, I talk mostly through my eyes. You know, I'm not a very expressionable person except in my eyes. And if the camera doesn't zero in close, then I look like I have a blank stare on my face. And that's very important, is that, that the camera gets close enough to your eyes so that people can see what you're thinking.
I want to get back to this fight scene in Code of Silence on top of the train. How did you and the stuntman that you were working with keep your balance while the train was moving? What were some of the tricks to doing that?
Well, the tricks is just having the ability to maintain your balance up there. It's, we had the fight prearranged, of course, but we're rolling all over the top of that train. And we're really controlling each other. We're preventing each other from falling off. So we're really balancing each other as we're fighting on top of that train. And you just, you know, either you have the athletic ability to do it or you don't have it.
Now, as you're actually holding on to each other and trying to help each other keep balance, you have to look as if you're fighting each other and trying to throw each other off the top of the train.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you talk a little bit about how you kind of make it seem like you're trying to throw the person off the train while you're really hanging on to them?
Well, it's kind of a hard thing to describe, you know, because you're up there and you're just doing the thing as strong as you can without losing your balance. And a couple times, you know, I broke my balance once, but he controlled it for me, and then he broke his balance once, and I brought him back on balance. And it's just a matter of being able to have the experience and the ability to be able to do that.
Did you have signals to one another to alert one another if you felt like you were losing your balance or in serious
danger? No, because we could feel it. Mm-hmm. You can always tell when you get a hold of each other whether he's balanced or not, so we can always feel it in our body language.
Okay. Let's look at fight scenes for a second. When you're choreographing a fight scene where you'll be using martial arts, are there certain things that you think have to get into the scene, like a certain number of kicks or
no.
a certain amount of like really dazzling stuff?
No, the main thing, when I do a fight scene, I try to make it as real as possible. You know, the thing is that if I'm fighting two guys is one thing. If I'm fighting four, like in Code of Silence, I fought about 12 or 14 and I got the daylights beat out of me. You know, I didn't win because it would have been totally unrealistic for me to whip that whole bar room. And so in turn, you know, I wound up losing that fight. But that's the realism of it. If I'd have whipped everybody in that bar room, it would have been totally unrealistic. And no matter how good you are as a martial artist, you only have so much ability. And so in turn, I wound up losing that particular fight. But I tried to make it as exciting and as dramatic as I could before I got whipped.
You have a kind of spin kick that you do.
Yeah, spinning heel kick, yeah.
Would you describe that, what that is for listeners who haven't seen it?
It's like having a baseball bat in your hand and swinging it, you know, like a baseball, like a batter would swing at a ball, but you torque your whole body around in a full circle and your leg swings around like a bat would, and it's extremely powerful kick. And I have to be, when I do that in my fight scenes, I got to be very, very careful because if I hit one of my stuntmen with that, it would cause real serious damage.
Now, this is a kick you actually mastered in your other life as a karate master.
Right, uh-huh.
Do you try to get those into your fight scenes because they look so good?
Yeah, everybody loves those kicks. You know, they love for me to throw those kicks on screen, and I try to. But the thing is that I don't try to do a martial arts fight scene in a movie that doesn't really warrant it. If you try to squeeze a round hole in a square peg, it's a little tough, you know. And so the thing is, I try to make, when I do a movie, try to make it realistic and try to put the fight scenes in when it really is feasible to do it.
In your autobiography, you talk about having to break the pain barrier in karate, and you've had a lot of broken bones during your years as a karate teacher and as a karate student. You have broken hands, broken noses. So what do you mean when you say breaking the pain barrier?
Well, you're able to eliminate and really ignore the pain. It's something you practice and train, and you get to a point where you're able to really ignore the pain.
Is this something you've had to practice as a stuntman too? You know, in your role as doing your own stunts?
Oh, yeah. That still doesn't mean I like pain, because I don't like pain. I'd prefer not to be hurt than being hurt. But the thing is, like in Firewalker I broke my ankle in the second week in the filming, so I had to go 8 weeks with a broken ankle, and I couldn't put a cast on because I was still filming, so I had to keep it taped through the whole movie. So it was painful, but you learn to work with it.
Are there times when a stunt has gone wrong, when someone who you were fighting with actually connected instead of almost connected, or when someone fell off something that they were...
Well, my poor brother has taken a tremendous beating. I've knocked him out twice. I broke his leg once, and so he's taken the worst beating of all the stuntmen I've worked with, because I work with him so much that sometimes we get carried away a lot of times, and I try to get too close to him, or he tries to get too close when I'm kicking at him, and so in turn we've made a little bit of contact, and he's had his injuries from our fights together.
How do you feel about actors who have a real tough guy image but don't do their own stunts?
Well, that's fine. You know, I see nothing wrong with that. You know, the it's probably the best thing to do is not do your own stunts because, first of all, you're taking pay away from a stuntman who, that's how he makes his living, is doing stunts. And so it's probably the best thing to do, and I probably shouldn't do it either, but it's, right now it's kind of a thing I enjoy. I'm kind of a frustrated stuntman, I think.
Well, you kind of have to do it at this point, don't you, even if you didn't want to?
No, I don't think so. If I didn't want to, I wouldn't have to, no.
Okay, my guest is actor Chuck Norris, who is also a karate expert. He's starring in the new film Missing in Action Part 3, which he co-wrote. And he also just wrote an autobiography called The Secret of Inner Strength. We'll talk more after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Chuck Norris is my guest. I recently saw your new movie, Missing in Action Part 3, Braddock.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's interesting. You're without a shirt during a good deal of the movie. And I wonder if that's intentional, to show off all the muscles.
No, not really, because I'm not an Arnold Schwarzenegger. But, in the torture scene that you saw, it was conducive to not have the shirt on. But
conducive to what?
Well, because I'm being electrocuted and all the stuff here. So they have to be able to see the reaction of my body being electrocuted.
Can I tell you my reaction to that scene?
Sure.
Well, just to describe it, you're being tortured by South Vietnamese, right?
North Vietnamese.
North Vietnamese.
He's from the Saigon, yeah.
Okay. And they've kidnapped your son. So you're being tortured in this cell. You're suspended by your hands. Your hands are tied over your head. And you're standing on your toes. Now, your son is in bondage in a chair in front of you, and there's a gun pointed at him. And the torturer tells you that if you step down, you're on your toes, but
right.
if your heels touch the ground and your arms lower about an inch, that this gun is going to go off.
This shotgun, yes.
Yeah, and shoot your son.
Mm-hmm.
Now, seeing you kind of writhing up there with all your muscles exposed, it struck me as almost a sexual bondage scene.
Well, is that good or bad? I don't know.
I'm not trying to put any value on it. It just struck me, and I was wondering if that was conscious or not.
No, not with me. It wasn't conscious. No, I didn't see it as that. But maybe the women might. I don't know.
Or some men might. I don't know.
I don't know really, because I don't see myself as that way. So, but it's interesting you thought that way. But the thing is, what we were trying to, show the mental torture as well, because, here he is trying to force my feet down so the shotgun will go off and kill my son. So it was the tension in the mental torture that was going on as much as the physical torture, because it doesn't, work out that way.
You're the woman who plays your long-lost wife,
yes,
in the movie. I hope I'm not giving too much away. It's killed off pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I think you're frequently in movies where you don't have a romantic interest
ladies
in it. Yeah.
Yeah, my leading ladies don't last too long in my films, do they?
Well, why is that? Are you, do you think it's part of your image to not get romantically involved?
No, not really. I think the key thing is creating an emotion that builds the whoever plays the bad role to build up him being, super bad, giving me a reason to retaliate for the atrocities that have been inflicted, and whoever it is that is in the movie with me, most of the time it's a woman.
A lot of adults in America, especially like parents of children, get very upset at certain action movies, mm-hmm, in which there's a lot of violence depicted. Now, I understand that you actually get more upset by movies that are sexually explicit.
Well, the thing is, when we talk about violence, again, it's how you do it. If you provoke violence on the screen, if it's a provocation of violence on the screen, then I don't think it's done in a very negative way. What I try, my films are kind of a retaliation against violence. And I don't see that as a bad thing for children to see. And I kind of have that reputation, I think, with the audiences, with the families throughout the country, that they don't mind their children coming to see my movies because it's action-oriented, but there's no extreme language, and there's no strong sexual scenes in the movie. And I think most families are more concerned about that than they are the action sequences in the movies.
Well, there's a scene in the movie, and this is part of the commercial that is being shown on television to advertise the movie, you're basically told by the CIA not to go into Vietnam and don't step on any toes there. Mm-hmm. And you say, I don't step on toes, I step on necks.
Yeah. Well, it was funny how that term came up. I was in New York about a year ago. And some kids are following me down the road, you know, and so they're all, you know, so they're talking to me and all this stuff here. And one kid says, man, he says, you don't step on toes, you step on necks, you know. But, and that's how I remember that. So that term I kind of stuck in my mind. And so when the movie came about, I said, hey, I like that terminology. So that's why we inserted it into the movie.
But do you think stuff like that encourages violence in kids who go to see the movie?
No, because the thing is, what I'm basically saying is if you're walking down the street and you're attacked by a robber or a rapist or whatever, you know, you've got to do whatever you can to get out of that situation. And you can't be stepping on the guy's toes. You're going to be stepping on something harder than that. And that's what I'm trying to say is if someone pushes me, I'm going to push back twice as hard. And that's what when he says, don't step on toes, I'm saying, I don't step on toes. You know, if you step on my toe, I'm going to step on your neck.
Now, for some of your movies, or at least one of them, I know you went to argue with the rating board that the film deserved a PG instead of an R rating. Mm-hmm. Which movie was it?
Oh, Good Guy. Well, three of my movies.
Three of the movies.
Yeah, Good Guys Wear Black, Lone Wolf McQuade, and one other film. But the thing is, it doesn't seem to matter in my films whether they're R or PG. I think, you know, people, you know.
Everybody goes.
They still go.
What argument did you use, though?
Well, I think the thing is, basically what I was explaining to you is that it's how action is demonstrated on the screen. If it's a malicious type violence where you're provoking it and you know, then it's not good. But the thing is with me, my films being a man who was faced with something that he must deal with, like John Wayne did in the 50s and 60s. It's basically a modernization of the old John Wayne movies, if you really analyze them. Then I don't think it's bad for children to see them. And the three times I've debated it, I've won all three times. But I got tired of debating every time my movie came out. And it seemed like it didn't matter whether my movie was a PG or an R. It seemed like the same audience came anyway, so I just got tired of debating it.
Chuck Norris is my guest. He's an actor and star of the new movie Missing in Action Part 3. He's also written an autobiography called The Secret of Inner Strength. You're approaching 50 now, right?
Well, I'm a little ways off yet, but, but I'm on the top end of it, yeah.
Okay. Are there roles that... do you have a different sense now of the kind of role you want to get in the future, of the direction you want to head in?
No. Well, the main thing is condition-wise, I'm in better shape now than I was 20 years ago when I was a fighter. I'm stronger and I'm faster now than I was when I was in my 30s. And so the thing is, physically, I can do anything that I want to do. But whether I want to veer out and do other things, you know, something I've got to think about. If the audience start getting tired of the type of movies I'm doing, then I've got to reconsider what it is I want to do. And I'm not really sure yet.
In your movies, your character is constantly being provoked to use his martial arts skills and to pull out guns and knives as well. Do people ever try to take you out in real life? Have you been called on in real life to use those skills?
I've never had to use it. I've been all over the world and traveled everywhere, and I've never had anyone approach me in that respect. I think mainly, again, it's the philosophy that I demonstrate on the screen. It's not a guy who's walking around looking for trouble with a chip on his shoulder. That's what brings that type of people on to challenge you. It's a guy who doesn't want trouble, but he's forced into the situation to have to deal with it. And with that philosophy in mind, it's not the type of character that people think that you're walking around looking for trouble. And so in turn, I don't think, that's probably one of the reasons I haven't been encountered that way.
I'm sure that knowing the martial arts gives you a lot of self-confidence. Have you ever used that to psych someone out in a potentially violent situation?
Not in an antagonizing way. Again, when you see trouble happening, you try to diffuse it before it becomes uncontrollable. And I've had to do that several times where I've been able to diffuse a potential physical altercation before it got to that extreme. And that's part of... and the thing is, if you don't get emotionally involved and you analyze the situation of why it's happening, generally you can get out of it. And when, especially when the person realizes you're not doing it because you're afraid, but you're doing it just because you don't want the trouble. And they can feel that. They can generally get a sense of that. And when they do, then and if you give them an out, then generally they will take it.
Do you ever go to movie theaters to watch your adventure films with audiences to see how they react?
All the time. Mm-hmm. All the time, yeah. Because that's how you get a bead on whether the people like your film or what they do and don't like. And so I like to do that a lot, is sit in the audience and see if they're responding to the scenes the way I hope they will respond. And if they don't, then I say, uh-oh, well, then I've got to figure out what's wrong here. So, but yeah, I do that a lot.
What's your favorite kind of audience to watch with?
Well, of course, an audience that really gets emotionally involved in the film, because I try to create that emotion. And, you know, like, you know, the attempted rape scene in the movie, you know, with the girl, you know. I mean, I go to the extremes of dealing with that person, but the thing is that the audience really, you know, here's this guy who's trying to rape this, you know, young teenage girl, and I stop it and I take care of him, and the audience really gets a kick out of that, you know.
Okay. What effect do you think you've had on the American view of maleness?
God, Jesus, I don't know. I don't know if I've had any effect on that respect. Because again, I don't even think of me having a maleness type of an effect on the audience. I just play a particular type of character that I enjoy being. It was a character that I demonstrated as a karate instructor for 15 years, and I've tried to carry it on into my screen life. And, a guy who's has a certain compassion for life and people, and doesn't want violence, but then he's put into a position that there's no choice but to deal with it. And we all would have to do that in our life if we're forced into it.
Well, Chuck Norris, I want to thank you very much for talking with us. Thanks for being with us.
You bet. My pleasure.
My guest has been action star Chuck Norris. He stars in the new movie Braddock, Missing in Action Part 3. He's also the author of a new autobiography titled The Secret of Inner Strength, published by Little Brown. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.